She Did It Her Way podcast, episode 148, how to develop a passion that aligns with you. Conversation with Dr. Gabby.
Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, a collective of interviews with top female entrepreneurs from around the globe who have done it their way. These women are disruptors, savvy, courageous, confident, innovative, decisive, unconventional, and humble. Our ladies have proven business models, have taken risks, and have failed only for success to follow. Join us as they share their stories, behaviors, habits, mindset, thought processes, and what it is like to be a woman who means business. And now, here's your host, Amanda Bolin.
Another day, another week, another podcast episode. Thank you guys, you beautiful people, for tuning in to the She Did It Her Way podcast. I don't know about you guys, but had a fantastic weekend back in Iowa with the family celebrating Easter. Maybe you were celebrating Passover this past week. Maybe you were just chilling and you're like, yeah, no, I'm just celebrating life, which is fabulous and pretty awesome as well. And who doesn't love life and knowing that everything in life is a choice? And that is something that I've personally had to remind myself over the past few months. So if you're going through something that maybe you find yourself not in the best of moods or you become ungrateful, just remember that everything is a choice and you have to practice that choice over and over. It's like a muscle so that you can then change the way you are experiencing life, because life doesn't happen to you. You create it through your choices that you make. And one of my favorite quotes is by Wayne Dyer, and he says that when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And if we can change how we perceive a situation in our life and the story that we tell us, then the things that we're looking at change. And that takes practice. So if there's something in your life that you are finding that isn't necessarily clicking, or you're feeling discouraged by it, just attempt to change the way you look at it and then see what the outcome is after that. Before we get into today's episode, I'm so excited to share this with you guys. Molly Rose Daly, a really close friend of mine and someone who is actually an OG, an original gangster, if you will, to the She Did It Her Way podcast, has been busting her butt and crushing it at business the past 4 years, being a virtual assistant to her clients and servicing her clients. Also, again, she's been able to travel and be location independent. She spent a month in Spain earlier this year, and then last year she went away for an entire month to Eastern Europe, all while traveling and working and making money for doing that. And one of the things is that I get a lot of people that are unhappy with where they're at. They don't know where to turn to. They don't know what they want to do. And this is why I'm telling and sharing what Molly is up to, because I think it will benefit. I believe it'll benefit a lot of people that are listening to this and that find themselves that they are stuck and they just are in a rut and they don't know how to get out of it. Molly has taken everything that she has learned the past 4 years of being a virtual assistant for her clients and has made an academy for virtual assistants. So she teaches you everything that she has learned in the class curriculum, from how to identify, how to the virtual assistant marketing, how to go through the numbers, so how to balance the budget, what type of money management systems you use, the communication, so how do you onboard a new client, the project management, outsourcing, how to test your virtual assistant. So even though you're a virtual assistant, you can still outsource work and to other people that are around the world, and Molly teaches you how to do that. There's also a bonus, so you get template library. You also get the power of being efficient and effective in the top VA tech tools. So not only number one, I'm really excited for Molly that she's launching this, but number two, if you guys are at all, if any one of you, you're interested in like what else is out there, maybe you're not super excited or happy in your job, or you're trying to find your footing or a way to make money as you build up your company, this is something that I do believe is extremely beneficial for you, and you definitely should check it out. So I'm going to have a link in today's show notes for today's podcast that you guys can click, And then when it comes up, when you click the link, it'll come up and it'll say the VA course. You'll want to click that. And then that's when you're going to be able to see the entire course outline, what Molly is offering and what all goes into it. Also, you get to learn more about Molly and her story and how much fun she's been having the past 4 years being a virtual assistant. If you guys are at all interested, I highly, highly encourage you guys to check it out ASAP, as May 1st is when the discounted rate will go away. And then after that, the course, the price of it will go up. So definitely check that out. And also as well, if you guys have any questions at all, or you want to talk to Molly and learn more about her and her story, you can email her at hi@academyforvirtualassistance.com. Okay. Now for today's episode, we have Dr. Gabby in the house. She is a holistic, she's an expert, a leading expert as a holistic health professor, and amongst other things, as a coach for other aspiring entrepreneurs who want to get into the health and wellness industry. She has women in wellness career coaching, and she helps people build their business that teaches holistic practices. So we talk about everything from her business of helping other entrepreneurs grow their holistic practice to actually talking about the art of holistic medicine and being able to treat yourself holistically, and what are some things that you can do when you are stressed or overworked, things like that. We also talk about how to create a business based off of a need and learn to inspire lifestyle change with your business as a wellness holistic coach, and discover how to develop your craft and your passion that aligns with you. I'm so excited. Coming up next, Dr. Gabby.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. We're at another episode of the She Did It Her Way podcast. And today I'm talking with Dr. Gabby. I'm so excited to have you on the phone. How are you doing, Dr. Gabby?
I'm doing great. How are you, Amanda?
I'm super excited to be here. I just got done telling Dr. Gabby that I'm wrapping up a day long of interviews, and I'm like, what day is it? What's going on? Like, who am we talking to? But always grateful to be with the women who come on the show that bear it all. I guess that's kind of like, not to mimic the Bachelor, Bachelorette about the women come and bear it all, tell all. Anyway, squirrel moment. Dr. Gabby, tell us what it is that you do, and then share with us your journey and how you got there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm currently a coach for health and wellness entrepreneurs. That was not my childhood dream. I wanted to dance on Broadway and travel around the world doing acting and modeling and dancing and stuff like that. I was super into arts when I was a kid. And then when I was in college, I got really into the holistic health and wellness scene. I fell in love with massage and energy medicine and meditation and yoga. And I decided that that was what I wanted to do as a career. And I went all the way with my education, as they say. I got my PhD. I did my research about women healers from all over the world, studying and practicing different kinds of medicine, like Ayurvedic medicine, Chinese medicine, and medicine from other cultures. And I started teaching that about 10 years ago. So I've been a professor for 10 years teaching at different universities in the United States. But something that I saw that was kind of troubling was that a lot of my students were graduating from different trainings and certifications and programs, and they wanted to be entrepreneurs, and they were excited about building a practice or opening a center or speaking or writing, and they didn't have the skills and support that they needed to make that happen. So then I shifted about a year and a half, 2 years ago, into creating community and resources for them so that they could navigate the wild world of wellness and figure out how to publish and speak and teach and coach and lead workshops and retreats and things like that without, you know, struggling so much, because there's so much on the internet, there's so much information. And now that half of our lives are lived in the digital world and half of our lives are in the real world, trying to figure out how to balance those things, like what face-to-face events do I go to, what online things do I do, and figuring all that out can be kind of overwhelming. So I wanted to create a place and a conversation and a community where they could kind of easily find what they need, what they're looking for, and connect with like-minded people who can help them accomplish their goals. So that's what I've been doing.
Oh my gosh. I'm like sitting here listening to you tell your journey and your story, and I'm getting bombarded with so many questions that are coming to my brain that I can't even process fast enough to figure out. Okay, wait, I want to start there. No, wait, just kidding. I want to start there. I want to start there. I want to talk about her business, and I want to talk about her transition, and like from doctor PhD teaching to then building this conversation in this space for other individuals similar in your industry that then want to go out and do entrepreneurship. So, my goodness. Okay. Actually, let's start with talking about your practice and mm-hmm. the energy, and also like with getting your PhD, and share some of the things that you've learned along the way that could maybe help our listeners with energy and things that they might be battling with, or things that you might see with your clients that come up.
Yeah, absolutely. I got into the whole holistic side of things because my dad was a physician. He was a neurologist and psychiatrist, and I lived in a home where every time you coughed or sneezed, we got medicine. It was like, here, have an antibiotic. You know, antibiotics was like kind of like the M&Ms in the house, which was terrible and bad for you. And I got into my like late teens, early 20s, and I just didn't feel good. I didn't have good stress management tools. I didn't have a healthy diet. I was still like eating fast food and just, you know, not living a super healthy lifestyle. And it was becoming unmanageable. I was having panic attacks, and I just didn't feel like a good, healthy human. And I met some really, really amazing healers. I met some massage therapists, some Reiki healers, some yogis, and I started to go to some different expos, and I started to kind of learn about their whole world. And this was before it was popular, right? There was not green smoothies on every corner and yoga studios everywhere.
Without green smoothies, like probiotics. Oh my gosh.
This was, yeah, like pre-green smoothie time. This was back in like the mid-90s, if you can believe it, and early 2000s. So I fell in love with all of it in the same way that a lot of people are falling in love with it now, right? I fell in love with the vegetarian diet and the meditation, and I just binged every time I could on workshops and classes and trainings, and met a lot of amazing mentors. And then I decided, I thought I was going to originally go down a traditional road of clinical psychology and have a practice where I had patients. But I decided that that was too boring and that there was too many exciting things happening in wellness. So I started interviewing all the different women, like you're doing today with me, interviewing all the different women healers that I could find. And that eventually became my doctoral research, which then eventually became teaching. And during that time, I saw thousands of patients who were struggling with all kinds of things, physical problems, injuries, accidents, depression, anxiety, addiction. I worked with a lot of addicts for about 3 to 5 years. And really, the holistic approach seems to be the most effective. If you just treat the physical body, you can make some physical changes, but if the mind is still ruminating and stressing and doing what it does and you don't address it, usually the physical problems come back, and oftentimes they come back worse. So it became pretty clear that we needed to address the mind. And then if you address the mind and the body, but you don't really tap into the spirit or that sense of purpose, meaning, you know, what's getting you out of bed in the morning? Are you doing work you love to do? How are your relationships? If you don't address those kinds of things, then often that undermines, you know, your ability to stay in a positive mindset and your ability to be healthy. So really having like the holistic approach and looking at all the different parts of your lifestyle and how all those different pieces support your health and well-being is the most effective and sustainable way to really create like long-term health and well-being. And so I did that for a long, long time, and it serves me well, because even as an entrepreneur, you're going to face a lot of overwhelm, isolation, different kinds of lifestyle challenges as you're building, launching, growing, scaling. And so if you're grounded in some of these holistic modalities, if you have self-care practices, if you have a good diet, those things are going to help you to be more successful, in your business and your career. So it goes hand in hand, I think.
So I know one thing that I was jotting down notes as you were speaking. One of you mentioned addicts, and like, for example, smoking. You can't talk. Have you ever had any clients that maybe smoked or and then what did you recognize, like, with the mind? And I'm sure it's probably similar with other addictions across the board, but like, how would you then suggest or treat your patient to be able to overcome, like, moving, taking next steps forward to overcoming that addiction, if that
right.
makes sense? I don't even know if I said it correctly.
Yeah, yeah. So addiction is really interesting. There's a couple of different reasons why people become addicted to things. Often it's a means to escape and to not feel your feelings. So it's easier to eat or smoke or have sex or have wine than it is to deal with the fact that you feel really sad or lonely or scared or angry. So often it's a coping mechanism for emotions. And oftentimes there's a peer pressure, social pressure related to it. So if you want to, you know, take a break at work and go outside and get some air, you can go outside for a couple minutes and have a cigarette and chit chat with your friends. And there's kind of this social component to it. I mean, with the drinking as well, I mean, our lives, a lot of our social lives revolve around drinking, like Super Bowl parties this past weekend. And like, you know, like drinking is a big part of, you know, Christmas dinner or New Year's Eve, or just, you know, it's like, it's embedded kind of in our relationships. So there's like the social component of it and how you do it to feel a sense of belonging or to connect with other people. And then what happens after some time is it becomes a biological, psychological habit. So biologically, your body becomes used to having the nicotine or used to having the sugar and the alcohol, and it craves it, and your chemistry changes, and you don't feel right if you don't have it. So whereas you used to feel normal, well, you know, normal-ish without it, maybe a little bit stressed, maybe a little bit overwhelmed or whatever. Once you add that, now not only do you have the underlying feeling, but now you have this need to have this thing that you think is helping you cope. And the, what the mind does is the mind adapts to the situation because it's really clever. And it says, oh, we need this. Like, we need to have the cigarette or we need to have the beer to feel better. Because the body's saying that it wants it because there's the craving. And so now your body and your mind are like thinking that this is like, you know, something that you should be doing on a regular basis, and it becomes more and more habitual, and the chemistry of your body becomes more and more addictive. And you know, you kind of find yourself just in this loop, of repeating it. And so, the treatment centers where I worked, we took a really holistic approach. We looked at people's relationships, like, how do you get away from the relationships where people are smoking and drinking and doing this stuff? And how do you cultivate relationships where people are not doing those things? So you can go out and you can have sober fun, and you can go outside and take a walk without smoking, and things like that. How do you cultivate sober relationships? How do you address the underlying emotions that are causing you to do it in the first place? Like, if you're just taking a break from your computer and going and smoking a cigarette just so you can like clear your head, what can you do instead? Like, what are the options? Can you maybe journal for 10 minutes or meditate or do some handstands, or is there something else that you can do to have that kind of sense of relief without doing something that's unhealthy? And then there's like lots and lots and lots of interventions like acupuncture, hypnosis, supplements and things like that to, you know, help you heal from, you know, whatever kind of damage, detox, whatever kind of stuff is in your body. So there's unlimited resources to kind of help you shift away and ultimately create a different kind of lifestyle so that you are living your life without these crutches, without these unhealthy habits. Does that answer your question?
Yes. No, thank you for doing that. I was just following. I could let you painted a picture so visually that like you could have taken any addiction and plugged it in there as well. What are some things that you found now when you transitioned out, or maybe you still teach, but like when you decided to make that decision to help other entrepreneurs in the same arena that you're in, what were some commonalities or themes that you saw within your students that was a trend and that you had to help them with it? And it could be like entrepreneurs in general too.
Mm-hmm. I generally see two trends. I see I see students who have completed some kind of training. It could be a typical undergraduate program. It could be a yoga teacher training. It could be a health coaching training. They've completed some kind of training, and they're really on a career path. They have a craft. They feel a calling. It's something they want to cultivate and do for the rest of their life, and they want to be really, really good at it. And they understand that it's a marathon and not a sprint. And they want to develop the relationships and the skills and the resources to really create like a lifelong career in their craft. And then I see the other side, which is since wellness is really trendy right now, a lot of people, because they had fun at a yoga retreat or because they, you know, they like their green smoothies, they think that they're going to do it as a career. And that, you know, it's just going to be fun because they like wellness, because they like reading about it, because they like their Soul Cycle class, like whatever. They think, oh, I'm just going to do this as a career because it's fun. And the difference is that if you're going to do this and you're going to make a living doing it and it's going to be a business, you have to develop your craft. You have to become really good at something. Like you're either really good at one-on-one sessions with people and changing their lives. You're really, really good at writing, and the stories that you write really inspire people to make lifestyle changes. Or you're a phenomenal speaker, and when you get on the stage, it's electric, it's inspiring, and people are motivated to, you know, change their lives. So you have to develop some kind of strength in your craft, if you really want to do this long term as a business or a career, versus if you just think that it's fun, it's going to be a lot more challenging to handle the day to day grind of, you know, how do I set up my technology? How do I promote myself? How do I do my networking? Where do I go to meet people? How do I get clients? How much do I charge? How do I sell them my stuff? Like, the actual operations of operating a practice is going to be a lot more challenging if you are not approaching it from the perspective of really creating a craft and a career. So that's generally what I see. And it's, you know, wellness is really trendy right now. It's really popular. It's attracting a lot of people, which I think is amazing. But I think you have to get in a very specific kind of mindset if you're going to approach this as something that you want to do professionally. You know, it's possible. It's also possible to build it as a side hustle while you're building other things. You know, you don't have to leave your day job to do some, you know, fun health and wellness stuff on the side, teach a few classes or write a few blogs or things like that. So it's also something that you can integrate into your life if you are not ready yet to commit 100% to being an entrepreneur.
What do you think has made the green juice and the wellness revolution so big? And I mean, like, again, like you said, I'm so thankful for it, because there is nothing more than if I, like, I remember I was out in San Francisco like a year ago, and we went wine tasting, had cheese for 2 to 3 days straight, and then I got my hands on an acai bowl, and I'm like, oh, my body loves it so much. And like, it really does. It loves really good food and things that it can process. But what do you think really kicked up the wellness
revolution?
Yeah, revolution. There we go. Yeah.
I think we hit a tipping point with Western medicine, where Western medicine is often making people sicker than it is helping them. I think a lot of people had experiences like me. I hear it from my students all the time, where you know, they were having chronic pain or chronic fatigue, or they developed, you know, God forbid, a cancer or diabetes or something like this. And Western medicine doesn't have good solutions for that. And it would just, you know, they would, here's some medicine, here's some chemo, whatever, and not address the underlying problems. And I think because there's a lot of toxins in our environment, there's a lot of toxins in our food, people have become sicker and sicker, and Western medicine isn't serving them. And it's not meant to serve them. Western medicine is designed to be an acute intervention, which means that if you have a heart attack or you break a bone or something, you go and they mend you. It's not meant to be every time you feel tired, every time you sneeze, you go and you get medication. The responsibility really lies on each individual to make lifestyle choices that allow them to avoid the illness. So making the right choice around food and moving your body, not sitting all day, and drinking enough water and avoiding things like smoking and drinking, like that's really the responsibility of each individual. And it's only just recently that I think people are willing to kind of take that on and stop looking to other people to fix them, and not just trusting that everything in the grocery store is like good for you. They're really, people are becoming more and more wise to kind of the marketing tricks, and the, you know, the processed foods, and a lot of documentaries that came out in the last 10 years, like Food Inc. and Food Matters, and all these documentaries, Super Size Me, that have really, there's been a wake up. It's been a big wake up call for general population, I think.
Yeah, I was just thinking about when you were talking about the fast food revolution, and it reminded me of the documentary, I think it Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. Mm-hmm. That's such a good documentary. And I grew up in a home where some family members had like chronic pains and things like that. And so I tipped on the side that said, okay, well, why is this happening? And how do I not take any sort of medication to like not mess up the natural state of my body? So two things for follow-up to that. The first question is, what are some of the toxins that we might encounter on a day-to-day basis that we don't even realize? And then how can we maybe avoid them if possible?
Yeah, the newest kind of wake-up call that people are having are around beauty and skincare products. Mm. So your skin is your largest organ, and everything that goes on your skin gets assimilated in the same way that the food that you're eating is. So if you wouldn't eat it, you shouldn't be putting it on your body. And if you go and you look in your bathroom right now, how many of the things would you eat that are currently in your bathroom? Like your shampoo, your conditioner, your moisturizer, your face cleanser. Like if you can't eat it, you shouldn't be putting it on your body. So people are just waking up to this now and going, oh my God. And they're like looking at the list of ingredients that are in their, you know, hair care, skincare, beauty products, and being like, I can't believe that I'm putting this on my body. And so now there's amazing, amazing, innovative, organic, natural beauty, skincare, body products that are coming to market, that are just, I mean, it's going to be just as popular going forward as the green juices and the yoga and all that kind of stuff, because, it's sort of been the last thing to really shift mm-hmm. in the marketplace.
What, talking about like the holistic side of things and the spirituality, and I know you had mentioned Reiki. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that? I just actually spoke to someone on another podcast about Reiki, but she we couldn't like exactly say what it is and what it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Reiki is one modality in a kind of umbrella term would be energy medicine, which is like a medicine that addresses the energetic, bioenergetic field of the body. So each cell of the body is vibrating. There's like an electromagnetic field for each cell of the body. There's layers of energy like through the body and around the body. There's lines of energy called meridians that run vertically up and down the body. There's chakras, which are in Sanskrit means wheels of light, these energetic centers, seven energetic centers throughout the body. And for thousands of years in Asian cultures, Ayurvedic medicine, Chinese medicine, doctors have worked with this energy to restore wellness to the body, to heal illnesses, and they've mapped out a system to create balance for each of the different organs, for each of the different chakras, meridians, all this kind of stuff. And they've been practicing it for thousands of years. It's also that underlying energy in martial arts, the chi that you move around, or in yoga, the prana that you move around, and the pranayama, the breathing, and things like that. So this has been part of medicine culture for a very, very long time. And then about 200 years ago, we started developing Western medicine, and we said we don't want any of this energy stuff in our medical schools. You know, we're gonna use technology, and we're gonna use pharmaceuticals, and we're not gonna integrate any of this energy stuff. And in the West, in America and Europe and stuff, we went down this very strange road of just like pharmaceuticals and technology. Whereas the rest of the world still recognizes and acknowledges that actually we're really more energy than we are anything else. And everything that you put in your body affects that energy. So cold food versus hot food, you know, the different kind of movements, the how fast you breathe or slow you breathe, all these things are ultimately impacting the energy. Reiki specifically comes out of Japan, and that was one modality that was developed in Japan to help restore balance to the bioenergetic field, to clear out stagnant energy, to improve the flow of energy. And the idea is that if your energy is flowing, then the body can be healthy. And if your energy is stuck, the body cannot be healthy. And the ways in which the energy gets stuck is if you have, you know, kind of heavy stuck negative emotions, if you have toxins, if your body is stagnant, you're sedentary, lifestyle, you're sitting all the time. There's a lot of things that create stuckness and congestion. And then there are things that open it up. So you can open it up with Reiki or acupuncture or Tai Chi or Qigong or yoga, and you can get it moving again, and you can clear out those blockages, and then the body can function in a healthy way again. So Reiki is an awesome modality to reduce pain, to reduce inflammation, to increase relaxation and parasympathetic nervous response. So the nervous system has two parts. One is fight or flight, that's sympathetic. Parasympathetic is rest and digest. That's where we rest and restore and relax. Reiki is great to help us go back into the parasympathetic system and rest and restore and relax. And luckily, you know, science and research is kind of getting caught up with us now around energy medicine, and you can find a lot of great research about this. I believe Reiki is practiced in 800 hospitals and medical centers in our country right now.
Wow.
So it's getting more support in the literature and scientific support, finally, which is great. And as well as acupuncture and healing touch and some other modalities, but we are actively practicing Reiki in hospitals, health centers, hospice, and places like that.
That's amazing. Well, I know I've never done it, and I'm gonna make it a point to do it, the Reiki, because I have a few friends that have done it, and they've all said very positive things about it. You mentioned something about the difference between hot food and cold food and how that impacts your energy too. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah. One of the courses I've been teaching for a long time is an Eastern nutrition course, which means how have they been eating in Asia for, you know, 5,000 years, as opposed to us eating here with our standard American diet pyramid with bread on the bottom and, you know, something else and something else. So there is an alternative approach to nutrition, the Eastern approach. And there's a great text by Paul Pitchford called Healing with Whole Foods that I highly recommend. It's a massive, massive book, but it really goes step by step through the Eastern approach and explores all the ways that food and environment and mindfulness and activity impact your diet and ultimately your health and well-being, right? So food has properties of hot and cold. Some foods are easier to digest than others. Your body has cyclical times where different organs are active, so it's more appropriate to eat different things at different times.
What? No, okay, you have to talk about that afterwards, because I'm highly interested, and I feel like women might really more to that than men, but I don't know.
There's a whole science and medicine around Eastern nutrition, and that looks at much more specific properties that food other than, does it have protein? Does it have carbohydrates? You know, does it have this mineral or that mineral? It really looks at a lot of different kinds of properties of food. Like, is it the food natural to the environment that you're in? Like, you know, is it hot or cold outside? Like, should you be eating hot foods or cold foods to cool the body, warm the body? Do you have, you know, what kind of energy deficiencies or excess do you have in the body that could be enhanced by the food that you're eating? So which is why I recommend this text, because it's like several hundred pages of just perfect explanation if you want to start to adapt to a more integrative or Eastern approach to your diet. You know, an easy way to learn about your organs and which organs are active. You can just Google organ activity clock. Explains how every couple hours different organs become active in the body. And, you know, like, for example, what time is it now? It's 5 o'clock where I am right now. So for the next 2 hours, the kidneys are going to be active. They store nutrients, they build bone marrow, they, you know, they clean the blood and stuff like that. So different parts of the body are going to be active at different times according to the Chinese medicine clock, right? This is a different approach to nutrition and medicine and the body than we have in the West, in America.
You know, like, I find that stuff so fascinating. I mean, and another thing, question too, is there, like, I've noticed that during the times in my life where life has been like in flow, if you will, the weight on my body is not there. I feel very light. I feel very, just very present, not foggy. Mm-hmm. And then times in my life when I feel in chaos, I just feel a little bit heavier. I mean, part of it might be because even the activity is still the same level, still working out the same, but it's amazing how, like you were saying before, the mind and the body have that relationship with one another where I wonder, like, can you share if the mind, like, knows what state you're in, and then from there, like, that is attributed to sometimes people like in inflammation or keeping some pounds on them?
Of course. Absolutely. Not only does the mind know what state you're in, the body knows what state you're in. The body knows if it's storing anxiety, depression, confusion, indecision, procrastination. The body knows that. The body stacks that up. It doesn't even have to go through the mind. So people who have experienced like severe traumatic events, for example, their body will store that. And if they hear a loud noise, the body will all of a sudden start responding to that situation as if it's actually happening. So yes, the mind remembers, and the mind can create inflammation, can create pain, all kinds of things, because it's trying to help you. It's trying to defend against something. It's trying to protect you or process something. And also you can completely bypass the mind and your body can just be reacting to things that are implicit memories, things that are stored in the body that you may not even be consciously aware of. So the thing that's so fun and fascinating and endlessly interesting about studying health and wellness is how complex and how rich the whole anatomy and physiology and all the processes of the body actually are. And you can study it for a lifetime. Like, I've been studying it now for nearly 20 years, and there's still so much more to learn. It's really, you can keep going and going and going for your whole life.
Oh my gosh. I love, like, I could sit on the I could sit on Skype with you for another like handful of hours. But I do want to talk about, so your business, when you decided to start helping mentor, coach these entrepreneurs, what's been the biggest change for you now being in this arena versus the full, I don't know if I would call it traditional arena of teaching, but like now you are building like your business and finding mm-hmm. other people who are seeking out the information.
Uh-huh. It's a big learning curve for me, just like it is for everybody else. I had to learn all the technology tools. I had to learn social media, digital marketing. I also have a podcast. I had to learn podcasting. publish a book, and I'm writing another. I had to learn about the publishing market and building a platform. And I mean, just like everybody else, I had to learn how to translate my message and my mission and my passion and everything into a business and to get it online. I would say about 50% of my clients come from meeting face to face, like at conferences and networking events, and the other half come from, you know, online marketing and social media and stuff like that. And so I had to learn how to do all of that, and I had to learn how to communicate really clearly with people about what I do and convince them that it was something that they should commit to so that they could also see better results. So that's been an awesome learning experience, because I think we can get in our comfort zone and keep doing the same thing over and over, and then we become a bit stagnant. Like you were mentioning, how if you're not like really in the flow, you can kind of start to carry some extra weight and feel a bit heavy. And I get that feeling when I'm doing something that I've done many, many times before, and I'm feeling kind of creatively stagnant. So this was an opportunity to just go crazy and learn so much, be so creative, try new things, throw things out there, see how people responded. And I get really excited when I create something that people love and use. If I write a blog or do an interview or teach at a conference, and people get a lot out of it, and I hear from them days or weeks or even months later, like, oh, that helped me so much. That was, you know, such a great experience. Those kinds of things really fuel and inspire me to keep going and creating more things that can serve other people. So I'm very driven by serving others. Like, that's really what excites me and makes me want to continue to create things that make life a little bit easier for other people.
Mm-hmm. What would you say then with your business and building that? What type of online marketing has benefited you the most?
Well, I mean, I think having as much visibility as you can and being as active as you can without killing yourself. So I'm on every possible platform, like Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and Twitter and this one and that one. Like, I'm all over the place and I create a lot of content. So there's always content creation that's going out, which hopefully creates value for people. I invite people to have conversations with me. I do these discovery calls. So I have a lot of conversations during the day with people about their business and their dreams and what they're working on. And I teach, so I meet people through teaching. So, I mean, all of it creates connection and creates value and creates, you know, in sales language, leads, hot leads for the business. And I think that oftentimes there's nothing more valuable than the face-to-face, like looking in someone's eyes and or shaking their hand, feeling their energy, and or getting on the phone and listening. I feel like if you get too caught up in the online sales funnel and then something else and Facebook ads, and I think if you get too automated in that way, you really lose touch with the people that you're serving. So I try to keep a balance. And I think that's what my clients really appreciate about me. And I think that's why they work with me for many, many, many months. So if I start working with someone, it's not like a one-night stand. They don't come, buy an info product, and leave again. They work with me for 4 months, 6 months, 8 months, 12 months. They want to be part of my community. They want to be connected to me. And I think that's because I value the relationship above all else. And to me, it's more about quality than it is about quantity. So that's just the way that I approach it. I'm very present online. I do all the marketing and the advertising, but at the end of the day, I really want to have a conversation with you, and I really want to listen and help you, which I think that's not necessarily the motivation of all the kind of business marketing coaches that are out there today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally. What would you say then from a business strategy is one thing that you wish you would have done sooner in your business?
I like the way that I did it. I don't know that I would have changed anything. I maybe would have been not so hard on myself. I mean, in retrospect, you look back and you say, oh my God, look at everything that I accomplished. That's so incredible. But at the time when you're doing it, it can feel like you mentioned, you know, chaos. It can feel like, you know, you're going in a million different directions, you're juggling a bunch of different balls in the air, you're building a lot of different things at the same time. You know, I think celebrating the day-to-day wins and really feeling that sense of accomplishment and joy and satisfaction on a regular basis, I would have injected some more of that into the process. It's similarly, it's a similar kind of thing with health, whereas a lot of people approach their health in a very, very serious way. It's very serious. My health is serious. And, I think we can get that way about entrepreneurship too. Like it's very, very serious, you know, got to get a funnel, got to get the clicks, got to get the conversions. It's, you know, it can be very serious. And, you know, just being lighthearted and having a lot of fun, I think is critical. And now that's what I do. I'm not as serious as I was when I began.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're totally right. As simple as it sounds to say, make sure you have fun. It sounds so simple, but like we can get so hyper focused and be like, oh, the open rate wasn't like, what am I? Dang it. When it's like, oh, let's try this heading, see if this works. Is this funny? Okay, yeah, it is.
Right.
Great. It worked. And you have fun because, I mean, honestly, if we're not having fun, then what the heck are we doing? Okay, a couple of rapid fire questions for you before we wrap up.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that you could outsource about your business, what would it be at this moment?
There's one thing I could outsource. I run a membership community and people come into the community every month and I mentor them and we do these group calls. It'd be great if that were more automated so I could focus more of my time on connecting with new people and having conversations with potential clients. So more automation, I think, mm-hmm. for the admin stuff, you know, the stuff that you don't need to be so involved.
Yeah. That you would use the $100 or not. Oh man, that was my next question. My next question was going to be if you had $100, where mm-hmm. would you spend it in your business?
I'd go get a massage. I'm not kidding. Like, I think self-care is critical. I think all the sitting at the computer, all the standing, and like today, for example, so it's now 5:30 my time. So, I mean, I started this morning on Zoom calls at 9 a.m., and then I had another one at 10, and then I had another one at 11, and then I had a two-hour lunch meeting, and now I'm on here with you, and in between I responded to emails and phone calls. Like, I need to go get a massage is what I need to do.
Amen.
You know, it's like you don't need to spend another $100 on Facebook ads. You need to make sure that you're budgeting time and money to take care of yourself.
Yeah, I like that, the self-care. Because even like the massage could be, it's still a good, it's an amazing investment in yourself because you like the person who's running the business. So you need to be good to go.
Exactly.
Last question is, what is your favorite book and why? I know you mentioned the Whole Foods one. I didn't know if there's another one in addition to that.
Well, I wrote a book called Blissful Business, and that's one of my favorites. I'm writing another one for entrepreneurs as well. But I'm an avid reader, and I love to read memoir and biography because I feel like you get some of the story behind the story. So I used to be kind of like a self-help book junkie. And then when I started reading more about memoirs and really how people navigate their lives, how they make decisions, how serendipitous relationships kind of show up to support them, When I started kind of digging into the memoirs, I found that they were so juicy and so interesting. And so I wrote a blog post about 5 must-read books by female entrepreneurs. You can find it on my website, or it's also on Huffington Post because I write from them. And they're all books written by female entrepreneurs. Like, one is Body and Soul by Anita Roddick. She developed The Body Shop. Another one is, you know, Shark Tales, which is Barbara from Shark Tank. You know, like books by women who are doing really kind of fun things and who are telling you all the, you mentioned naked earlier, the kind of nakedness behind the scenes stuff. So yeah, that's kind of my book addiction.
And we'll, you guys are listening, we'll make sure to post a link back to the 5 books for the from the Entrepreneur for Females. So tell us as we wrap up, share, how can our listeners find you?
Well, I mean, you can find me on my website, which is my name, GabrielPolici.com. The other URL that will take you there is women-in-wellness.com. And you'll find me at Dr. Gabby Polici on social channels like Instagram and Twitter and things like that. But more than anything, I like to connect. So you don't have to just follow, but we can have a conversation and you can tell me what you're building, what you're dreaming about. And I'm happy to listen for 20 minutes and tell you what I think and share, you know, different tips and tools with you. So you can schedule that stuff through my website.
Love it. Dr. Gabby, thank you so much for coming on the show. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, go get that massage, girl. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Amanda.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the She Did It Her Way podcast. Did you like this episode? Head on over to iTunes.com to leave us a rating and a review. We would love to hear from you. And don't forget to check out SheDidItHerWayPodcast.com, where you can subscribe to our email list so you can receive the inside scoop on our latest episode released each Monday. Now, do us a favor and go make it a great week.